Good morning and welcome, everybody. This is Jeanette Nyden, and I'm calling in from Seattle, Washington, and I hope that wherever you are, it is a gorgeous day. So we're talking about negotiating value, not just bartering over price. Every customer wants value, and every supplier says that they provide value, but when it comes time to negotiate the contract, it's all price, price, and more about price. So how do you break out of that price-only conversation and really negotiate to provide value or to receive value? Value can be quantified, tracked, and measured over time, but most people don't have a common framework for talking about and documenting value in a customer-supplier relationship. So it's no wonder then when the contract comes out, everybody's focused on negotiating price. Today, you'll walk away understanding the types of value and how others have quantified that value through some examples. These examples come from my own experience. These techniques that I'm talking about today can and should be applied immediately to your next commercial negotiation. Get a pen and paper ready because I'm going to give you the link to download these slides with my notes and a negotiating value tips and tools guide, which will give you even more information to aid you in your value conversations. It's www.jnyden.com/negotiating value tools. Again, that's jnyden.com, negotiating value tools. I'll also give you a link at the end of the presentation along with my contact information. So let's go ahead and let's get started. So a little bit about me. I work with account executives to help them maximize their important customer supplier relationships. I've written a couple of books. Two are here on the screen. I'm going to focus primarily on the Getting to We book that I've co-authored with two others. And I provide customized contract negotiation coaching and training, and my services go from the negotiation planning all the way through past implementation. So a little bit about me. So let's talk about our agenda for today. Why do we want to focus on value and not on price? The four types of value. I'm going to give you an example of each, and I'm going to encourage you to show the math. This is going to be a critical piece to the puzzle. So why do we want to focus on value and not solely on price? Well, because in a traditional relationship where we focused on price and not on value, we have come up into kind of a corner. So these classical relationships are characterized by arm's length exchanges. So they have non-specific investments, minimal investments in coordination, little interdependence, but they are also incapable of generating profits beyond that of the traditional buyer-seller relationship in that industry. So it's kind of like they've sunk down to the lowest common denominator. That's what it means by incapable of generating profits beyond that of the traditional relationship in an industry. So customers, you know, want what they think others have that are like them. And so, you know, those are the benchmark studies. And then suppliers will make trade-offs to try to match price expectations, but neither company is necessarily getting a lot of value out of it. So the suppliers may not have the cash to invest in the relationship, and the customer thinks that they're paying a great price, but they may actually, these kinds of relationships may actually be eroding value and incurring transaction costs. And I'll talk about both of them in just a minute. So the problem is that these classic relationships tend to pit value against price. And why? And this is the big question that I've been sort of chewing on for a while. Why do we have to pit value against price when buying goods and services, right? So this presentation is going to give you some tools to be able to talk about value so that it's not an either or, it's a both. What's the price and what's the value? Because when you pit price against value and you focus entirely on price, you get painted into a corner, and both sides start to think, well, this is how it's always been. These are some of the things that my clients have said to me, or things cannot change, or I wish things could change, and I want things to change, but I don't know how to change. That's actually probably the best situation for everybody. So since you got a pen and paper out, I want you to jot down the names of some people who might be open to this conversation. So who are the people that you're working with who are going to be open to a value conversation, who know that it's beyond price? I know that there are corporate directives around price, and so that's why I want you to think about who's going to be open to having these kinds of conversations, both on the supply side and on the customer side. These are going to be the people who are going to be most open to what I have to say, because I want to make a note that business partners tend to bring a lot of baggage into the relationship from previous service providers or customers, from previous breakdowns, from cultural expectations. And so this is about changing mindsets to get yourself painted, to stop painting yourself into a corner. Price obscures value. So too many companies still look solely at price and they incur transaction costs. And we're going to talk about that next. And then many undervalue or fail to recognize the various value components. And we're going to spend the bulk of our time today talking about those value components. Okay, so transaction costs. This is probably one of the easier ways to try to unlock some value in the relationship, especially if you've got some control to be able to make some decisions around the transaction costs. You'll also, if you go to my website, you'll get the guide that has checklists, diagrams, some grids to help you work through all of these issues to unlock value. At a high level, talking to this particular diagram, transaction costs can come in a lot of different forms. There are corporate policies, we rebid or RFP every dollar every year. They're in the form of government regulations. Their culture, we don't want all of our eggs, i.e. our suppliers, in one basket, so we have to work with multiple suppliers that increase our transaction costs. It's the business environment. This is how everyone else in our industry has done it. This is how we'd like to do it. Or legal policies. You know, we have to have this particular term. So just the other day, I guess it was either yesterday or the day before, I got a contract from one of my clients, and they want me to provide insurance for death or bodily injury. You know, I've never killed anyone in a negotiation training program, and no one's ever killed anyone else in a role play. My coaching sessions, everyone's come out alive and whole and happy. So, you know, I look at it, and I'm like, oh, you know, here's a transaction cost, right? Because got to get insurance, got to provide proof of insurance, named insured, in case anyone dies. It's like, seriously. You know, I understand it. Well, as a lawyer, I mean, I understand it on some level. As a business person, I'm like, urgh. And so you can just imagine, you know, all the times business people grumble. Oh, why do I have to provide this? Why do I have to do this? It doesn't matter whether it's on the customer's end or the supplier's end. You know, all these additional costs that we incur just to go to market to see what we can purchase or sell, these are all transaction costs. And so the problem is this, is that a buyer can spend the same dollar amount and they can get less value. So if you look here where these two lines intersect, right, you've got this one here, higher transaction costs will decrease the value, right? So here we've got the same price, but look at the value components all the way over here. But if you lower your transaction costs, you actually can get more value for the same price intersection. And so that's what I'm talking about. Transaction costs, right? So how can we maximize the value within the process of creating the transaction, within the contracting process, buying process, selling process itself? An example, you know, of some potentially unnecessary transaction costs. Let me just take a step back and say transaction costs are necessary on the whole. What we want to avoid are unnecessary transaction costs. So where do we have control to take out unnecessary transaction costs? So arbitrarily putting a contract out to bid and telling a supplier this bid, this RFP is yours to lose, and then selecting the incumbent is a potential. I'm not saying it is. It is a potential unnecessary transaction cost because the money that was spent for them to, the supplier, to respond to the RFP and the money that you spent to go to RFP, if it didn't actually generate any additional value, then it's just a transaction cost. One of the ways that you can seek to eliminate transaction costs might be to engage the supplier to promise to invest any money that they would have spent in a competitive RFP into some continuous improvements. And I've actually had that happen and be successful. And suppliers would much rather invest in your relationship than invest in someone to develop an RFP, especially if they've got any indication that they'll win it anyway. So think about things like that. Think about ways in which you can get more value just by looking at your transaction costs. That's a great way to start with the value conversation because your goal is a high value deal. So it's the point at which value and price meet. You know, no one wants to pay too much for anything. I get that. But too often people will pay too little and they'll sacrifice value. So they'll try to really carve that price down, not recognizing that they've sacrificed value. So the question is that, you know, at what point do price and value meet within your relationship? And answering that question is a conversation. You know, this is why you have to have the person on the other end have a mindset and be open to a value conversation, because, you know, they may come back to you and say, hey, Charlie, you know, you've been asking us for all these price decreases, which we've gladly passed along, but do you realize that we haven't been able to decrease your internal costs? We haven't been able to increase the benefits to your internal users, et cetera. If you're open to that, you can start to play with the price value quotient. I'm not saying pay too much. I'm saying pay the right price to get the value that you need from the relationship. So let's talk about value then. Because as I mentioned, you know, there really isn't a common language for value, and there's some subjectivity to it, so people get a little nervous. I don't want to just hear about the word value, so let's talk about how we can demonstrate value. So the problem is that we need to recognize there's a subjective and an objective element to value. So because it's the value is the regard that someone holds for something, you know, I can place a lot more value on a particular item than somebody else. So went shopping for new pots and pans, and the way that I cook, I provide, you know, I place value on being able to put my pots and pans in the oven, the way that I cook. I don't want plastic candles. I don't want things that'll melt, blah, 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 right? That's a subjective value. It's the way that I happen to use my pots and pans. So, you know, that's something that I value. Somebody else may not. They may never even think about doing something like that. An objective value, though, is something that we can place a dollar value on. So what is the value of having a particular metal component, for example, in a pot or a pan? And I pay more for it at the outset, perhaps, maybe, although I did enough shopping to know that's not always the case, but then what do I get in return for that? So that's why this price value is really a conversation in a continuum, right? If you do enough shopping for whatever it is that you're looking for, you begin to understand the interplay of the different components of value with the price that you're paying, and it's not as easy as paying the lowest price. So here are the four types of value in a customer-supplier relationship: decreased costs, decreased risks, increased opportunities, and increased benefit. So decreased costs, these are the costs that constrain the relationship. These are not price. These are costs. These are costs to deliver a product or a service within either the supplier, but most likely within the customer. And so when you're thinking about a cost to manufacture or deliver a service, there are usually costs that can be taken out. So think about when we all went through this big automation phase and lots of automation through software was being brought in, we were able to take out costs. Now, labor isn't the only cost that can be addressed. I worked in facilities management with a couple of companies on behalf of a service provider and a financial institution, and we were able to look at cost through a total cost of ownership analysis around facilities management and growing the footprint and managing resources and creating a flexible workplace. And those are all ways to decrease costs that have nothing to do with the supplier decreasing labor costs. So I just want you to broaden your perspective on that. A risk is a possibility that something negative will happen. So I want you to think beyond legal risks, limitations of liability. I want you to think beyond warranty and indemnifications. And I want you to think about operational risks. What are some of the operational risks, and how can we either mitigate or eliminate them? An increased opportunity is the possibility that something positive will happen. So, you know, what is that positive opportunity, and how can that add value to the relationship? And a benefit can come in many forms. It can be improving a brand, increasing inventory turnover, generating a better response for a marketing campaign. But these, all four of these, can be quantified. So they're not just subjective, I like this, they're objective. I can put a dollar amount to an increased opportunity or to an increased benefit, and you'll see through the examples how others have done that in the work that I've done with them. So here are some examples. Okay, so here's decreased costs. Remember, these are the constraints in the relationship. So a food manufacturer was able to decrease its costs and also mitigate the risk of fluctuating fuel costs. So I'm going to be talking about the costs by looking at a cost pass-through for fuel. So if any of you are familiar with pricing models, you know, you've got a fixed fee. This is how much I'm going to pay the service provider. Fuel fee could be plus, meaning here's the cost plus management fee for the services. It could just be cost pass-through. There are hybrid approaches, so you can take a fixed fee for services and a cost plus a small margin for a product. So now you've got a hybrid pricing model. And so their pricing model had gone from a fixed fee to a cost pass-through. So rather than the service provider accepting all the responsibility for fluctuating fuel on the open market for the relationship, and it didn't matter who purchased the fuel was the fuel. So if it cost $1 a gallon, they paid $1 a gallon. There was no markup or management fee associated with that, and it wasn't baked into the fixed fee for drivers and et cetera. Now, the cost of the fuel is the cost of the fuel, and that's borne now by the food manufacturer. The risk, though, is that the service provider could just spend as much fuel as it wanted, right? I'm not paying for it. It's not part of my fixed fee. And, I mean, I know why buyers transferred the risk to the service provider, because they wanted the service provider to have some responsibility and accountability. But another way of doing it is by creating contractual obligations to operate efficiently. So the first way that they decreased costs was just to make fuel a cost pass-through, and for both companies to take responsibility for buying costs at the lowest possible price that particular day. So they were constantly buying fuel. They were I believe that they even worked in the same office unit together, and they were just constantly checking in with each other. So that was one way to mitigate costs. And then the next was around risk. So here's risks. So what they decided to do is create a contractual incentive and obligation to be more fuel efficient. So they did by agreeing to operate their trucks at lower speeds. They idled less frequently and for shorter periods of time. And then they used routing software. Now, this is a big deal, because the risk is that costs are going to go up for fuel. They could go through the roof. We could see ourselves paying several dollars a gallon per gas. They could decrease, as they have. The other risk is that you're going to use too much of it. I give you a gallon, and you're going to waste two-thirds of a gallon by idling or driving the wrong direction or being caught in rush hour traffic that you could have avoided. So to mitigate those risks and to take the cost out of consuming two-thirds of a gallon of gas you don't have to for some unnecessary reasons, we created some contractual obligations and incentives. And this routing software is a really big deal. Using this very effectively to decrease costs and risk, because that perishable food. And so what if the distribution center is at capacity and the next distribution center is 300 miles away, or in the case of Seattle, over a mountain pass? You know, what do we do? Is it worth it to idle and wait for the capacity to wane so that you can pull your truck in and unload, or is it better to drive to another distribution facility? And this is all really complicated stuff, but at least the focus is on mitigating the risk rather than having it borne by one party or the other. So this is ways that this particular relationship has taken costs and created value to the relationship by being far more effective in their purchase and in their consumption of fuel. So I want to talk a word about terms and conditions. This is used with permission. A senior legal counsel actually created this, and I found that this is really interesting. I like it when lawyers understand the economic or financial aspects of the terms and conditions that we're also used to negotiating. So here's your customer baseline here. This is how much they say that they're paying today. And, you know, here's your final price here, right, with a small profit for the service provider. So it looks like, you know, there's a nice, lovely little potential savings. But look at this. You've got base cost plus. You've got a markup for terms of payment. You know, in the recession, companies went from like 45 days to 90. I personally was getting paid like 110 at one point. So, you know, the carrying costs of capital are real. And so that's a calculable risk that could potentially be baked into the cost of doing something. You've got warranty. Any any additional administrative effort, either or your supplier. These are all calculable and they're all added in. And so you can see the price goes up. Now you've got your others. You've got your scopes sweeper. You've got your limitations of liability and indemnification. These are your additional legal terms, and it's increased the price. What I'm saying is that if you can look at risk, whether it's legal risk or operational risk or the risk of commercial risk of doing business, you've got additional potential savings at your fingertips. Have to be baked in. We can make choices in terms of our commercial terms or our technical specifications around risk, operational risk, that can help reduce the final price, the base cost. So dealing with risk and looking at risk is a really great way to generate some value and be able to put some dollars next to that value. So here is a quick slide that I put together for one of my clients. That was a manufacturer, and we're dealing in the marine industry, so, you know, legacy. These things have been built for a really long time in terms of their engines and propulsion systems, et cetera. So rather than seeking to just negotiate the base price, which is these orange bars down here, we also want to look at the technical and the commercial risks as well. So we want to look at the purple here. So what are the technical or specification risks or the operational risks, and how can we mitigate or eliminate those because they increase the overall cost? And then here are the commercial risks, which we just went over with your T's and C's. So I'm just looking for a couple commoditized. So this is a specialty paper. This isn't the paper that you buy at she wondered if this admittedly expensive high-end paper was going to make a difference. And so they did a sample, they did a pilot, and they meaning the paper mill and the vice president of marketing or the director of marketing and the other folks that were involved in the marketing campaign, sent out a sample and they tracked it. And lo and behold, a 1% increase, almost a 1% increase in return. For some of us, we're like, oh, 1%. You know, we're kind of used to dealing with a little bit bigger numbers. But the director was thrilled. And because that increase of almost 1% in the mailing campaign led to increased direct sales. People went into the stores and they bought the goods. And there were these lovely catalogs. I actually got to touch them with this very high quality paper and these beautiful images. And for people in that market, it made a difference. And they were able to track the increased sales. That's value. So, yeah, there's a price increase sales. And the that's an source to call center. So, you know, think about like, you know, you have to renew or activate your credit card. So you call in, you peel off the number, the 1-800 number, and you call in, and okay, now your card's active. Customer retention is dollars. And so what they were looking for is they were looking for opportunities for customer retention and for the upsell. And so by establishing customer retention as the goal, then the service provider created metrics for call quality and call efficiency. And by having the calls be effective and quick, they were able to demonstrate customer retention, and with higher customer retention, the opportunity to upsell, and they tracked all that, and there was actually better financial benefits as a result. So what the call center agents were doing was mining the opportunity. Hey, since I've got you on the phone and it's going to take 30 seconds to activate the card, can I ask you, do you want to transfer a balance? We've got this introductory rate. A couple people say yes, and it's more than worth the while. And so it's the opportunity, it's the ask. So quality of the call, the efficiency of the call. And so here's a quote at the at the end of the preliminary engagement, the pilot engagement, improved performance led to increased customer retention and higher product adoption, which increased our financial company's revenue and product penetration. So there you go, right? So here you've got real value associated with what we're doing. But now we've got the final piece, which is we need to show the math. So how do we show so you've got to be able to prove it and put a dollar value on it. If you can, you may get pushback and demand more price concessions that actually erode value. So when I think about when I've had clients, service providers say, well, you know, we put a proposal in for this. Find out why, you know, they weren't able to really show any improvement. So here's the cost, but what was the value? So did it decrease cost? Did it decrease risk? Did it increase opportunities? Or did it increase benefits? And put the numbers. So this is a contract management software client that I'm working with. And we actually went through and we worked with each four of the quadrants and just put some rough numbers together. So, you know, to decrease costs, if you've got a contract manager spending X number of hours per month, and that money could be saved. We calculated it could be up to $100,000 in savings annually, right? $144,000 annually. So by having that trigger, you could either renegotiate and continue $20,000, or you can go to that service. You've got no delays in the service, and you're not paying an arbitrary price, and you can have the option then to find a better solution. So these things can actually be demonstrated in terms of dollars. This is how much you can save. You could increase the benefits with your reputation. So if you're a service provider and you've got all these options to renew, you can be on the ball and you can get open to renegotiate and increases your brand. You're not just sitting back going, oh, well, too bad, you know, it lapsed and so the automatic price increase went into effect. You know, you want maintain customers. What do customers want? They want it to be easy to work with you. And then you can increase the opportunities too by using this contract renewal process to renegotiate for the scope. Perhaps the scope needs to increase, perhaps it needs to decrease. So the opportunity could be on either side of the equation. But basically what we're talking about is we're able to put real dollars to each one. A several million dollar contract to go through the RFP process. Look like, adjust the scope, adjust the different pricing models to make it worth their while, maybe introduce some continuous improvements that are much needed. Within and Here's the tips and tools guide. Location again, janeniden.com/negotiating-value-tools. I've got three very specific tips. I've got three very specific tools. I've got checklists. I've got diagrams. I've got a grid so you can answer some questions so you can focus on the value. So I hope that you will take the opportunity to go to my website and download the negotiating value tools. Here is some information about me. My contact information, my telephone number. Again, I work with service providers and customers alike as a commercial contract coach and provide customized tactical coaching and training from the negotiation phase all the way through contract implementation. So hopefully if you've got any questions, comments, or concerns, you will reach out to me because I would be happy to talk to you more. Thanks and have a great day.